The Portage Health Foundation is focused on doing its part to improve the health of Baraga, Houghton, Keweenaw, and Onondagan counties. Our work is intended to increase access to education, mitigate poverty, reduce hunger and poor nutrition, build safe communities, provide access to support healthy living, support medical research and innovation, and improve physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health and well-being. We invite you to see the work we're doing by signing up for our monthly email newsletter. It's free. You can subscribe by going to phfgive.org.
Welcome back to segment two of Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. I am, as this segment airs on Sunday morning, driving back from an extended trip downstate to deal with some family issues. One of those issues was a happy occasion, my grandson's graduation from Kalamazoo Central High School. And one of the things that he talked about as we were discussing things over dinner a day or two later was the friendship that he had formed with a young girl from Spain who had been an exchange student at Kalamazoo Central last year during his junior year, and how much he had missed her during his senior year, but he's hoping that they can connect when she makes a trip back to the United States this coming summer. And that kind of flashed me back to some experiences that I had in high school many years ago with foreign exchange students, including one who taught me to say words in Portuguese that I will not repeat on this family radio program. And so let's talk about foreign exchange students this morning. I welcome in Lauren Scher. She is the Regional Director for International Cultural Services. We have hosted a number of exchange students in the Copper Country over the years. We'll talk about why that's a good thing. Lauren, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, my grandson had a great experience with a foreign exchange student from Spain. They have formed a friendship that may last for many years. This is not a story that's unfamiliar to you, is it?
No, I mean, that's always the goal. And I have a coordinator that's out of Traverse City who joined us because she had been an exchange student in Denmark. I don't know, and I don't want to get her age wrong, 30 or 40 years ago. And she and her Danish sister have stayed best friends now for decades, introduced their spouses and kids and now grandkids, and they do every other year, you know, a trip in one direction or the other. And I mean, that for me is kind of things coming full circle. That's the beautiful part of exchange.
Yeah, it's been nearly 50 years since I graduated from high school, giving away my age here, which is not really a great secret. But I recall that one of our foreign exchange students, a young lady from Austria, came back to the United States to be the maid of honor at one of my classmates' weddings. And, you know, they have a friendship that has endured to this day. We set ours up through Rotary International, which is very busy in that field. And over the years, that Rotary Club down there in my little hometown of Vicksburg hosted probably 100 or more exchange students. And each one brought something to the table. They bring something new, a new perspective, don't they?
Yes, they definitely do. I love hearing, you know, everything fresh through someone else's eyes. When they get here and they message and they say, why on earth are your cars so big? Why is everybody's coffee they're holding so big? The things we just take for granted and don't even notice.
And those are things that I assume also give a little bit of fear to somebody who's coming over here from another country. That it takes some courage to do this.
Oh, my goodness, yes, absolutely.
Because, you know, obviously there can be language issues. There certainly are customs issues, if, as you have pointed out. Let's talk about the language situation, because obviously many foreign countries teach English, but not a lot of students are necessarily fluent in it.
Right. All of our students do pass an English level test. But you're right, depending what country they come from, the level of actual, you know, daily conversation might be a little bit different. Like a lot of our Asian students on paper have amazing English, but they haven't had as much practice speaking it, and maybe they're a little nervous when they get here. So a lot of kids the first month is a little bit difficult, and after that they develop that comfort level, and it becomes so much easier for them.
Flip side, of course, if you're thinking about hosting a foreign exchange student, you're also going to be concerned about language, because while countries in other parts of the world tend to do a fairly good job of teaching English as a second language, we in the United States do a lousy job of teaching anything as a second language.
Well, hey, I teach Spanish, so I take a little umbrage to that one.
but you know what I mean. In Europe, they start teaching English to our equivalent of first, second, and third graders. Yes. We don't start with a foreign language until high school, and there are a lot of studies that show that if you start teaching that foreign language much earlier, the learning window is open for that, and it's much easier to learn at an early age than it is in high school. So,
well, and I look through student applicants a lot, and I'll see some of the students in Europe who I'm looking at one right now from Turkey that we have, and not only does he speak Turkish and English, but he speaks Russian, German, and Finnish as well. So a lot of the exchange students will know 3 or 4 or 5 different languages, and I think that's amazing.
It is, and it's something that I guess in many cases we're a little provincial here on our side of the pond, but we don't put the emphasis on languages that perhaps we should. Even in the Copper Country, Finnish is the second language for some, but by and large, it's English, English, and only English. And if you take Spanish in high school or French in high school, as I did, you learn a little bit about it, but you never really become conversational.
No, not unless you're finding a good reason to use it. I do have a lot of Finnish students available, though, for those families that, you know, have Finnish heritage and maybe want to brush up a little bit.
So how do you match students up to areas? I mean, on one hand, a student from Finland who comes over here might feel relatively comfortable in the Copper Country where we have people of Finnish heritage. On the other hand, a student coming from Turkey, as you mentioned a moment ago, might feel less comfortable here. Is the student necessarily looking for a fit that will be comfortable, or are they looking for something that will challenge?
I think it depends completely on the individual. So when we have our students signing up on, you know, that side, they do have the opportunity to say, I want to go to a warm state, or I specifically want to be in Florida or California or Michigan or the Midwest region or the South. So they have those kinds of options. They could even request if they want to be in an urban area versus a rural area. A lot of kids, I find, actually the majority, leave it up to chance and they want to be surprised. My favorite was a Norwegian student who went to Hancock last year, and I'm sure lots of people here will remember Jan, and he was great. And I asked him at the end of the year, you know, if you could go back to the beginning of the year and give yourself any piece of advice, what would it be? And Jan said, I wouldn't. I'm so happy that I let every day be its own day, and I took all these surprises, and I never knew what to expect. He goes, and I just had the perfect year. So I think it just depends on the kid and their attitude, but we have the opportunity for them to choose. I like to look through the students and really kind of help families pinpoint ones that are going to fit best for them, not just our area, but for the family and their activity level and the hobbies that they have.
Yeah, let's talk about host families, because I know you have students who are looking for opportunities to study here in the Copper Country. Mm-hmm. What does it take to be a host family?
I always tell people it's like foster care light. So it's not quite as stringent of requirements for being a host family. You have to provide a bed for them to sleep in, but they can share a room with another teenager, obviously same gender. And you provide structure and guidance and meals when they're at home, but everything else comes from the student. They've got money for activities and sports. They have their own health insurance. They've got, you know, support where we're checking in every month. So it's not a whole lot. You just kind of have to love them and help them adapt a little bit and help them get around sometimes because they can't drive when they're here.
What about the cost of their education itself? The state funds most schools on a per student basis. If the student is a foreign exchange student, obviously they wouldn't get funding the year they're here. Maybe they count towards the next year, but is the school reimbursed for this?
No, the school gets state funding for the count the year the student is here, just as they would for any other student.
Okay,
it really helps our smaller schools a lot, too.
So does it make a difference whether they wind up in a larger school, such as Houghton, or a smaller school, such as Chasselle or Dollar Bay?
Well, for the schools, I would say yes. Like Houghton this year, they're pretty full. Their class sizes are big. So they're already full for us for exchange students. They only really had room for 4. But schools like Chasselle or Jeffers or Hancock or Barraga or Lance, where I teach, it's a really big benefit to have more exchange students there. It brings more funding. And there's so many students in our area who never think about getting out of the area and, you know, what else is available in the world. So great opportunity for local kids to kind of see what else and who else is out there.
Yeah, I certainly recall, you know, my experiences with foreign exchange students and my friend Tasso teaching me evil words in Portuguese from Brazil that I will not repeat on this radio program. But it really opened my eyes to how the other part of the world lives. We tend to think, I think, in the United States that we've got it all. We've got the perfect life here. We've got perfect housing, perfect big cars and such. The rest of the world, though, they've got things going on.
I think the best thing that one of my students actually said, and it was a student at Lons a couple of years ago, was, I see how my parents and my family and my friends do everything in Germany, but now I've had the opportunity to see a whole different country and how people choose to live their lives, and I get to pick the best of both and what's going to work for me. And I think that works in reverse, too. We can learn as much from students as they learn from us.
Are there political concerns that come into this, particularly over the last decade or so? There seem to have been some rising political feelings in the United States, feelings against people of this heritage or that heritage or the other heritage. Is that something that you consider if somebody's coming in from an area in the world that some people in the United States might not be too fond of?
Well, what a better way for us to learn about them and understand what the real people in that country feel versus the little bit that we get out of the media. I was really worried, actually, when everything started with the Ukraine, when I saw that we had some Russian students that applied and were coming. And I thought to myself, man, nobody's going to want to take these Russian students this year with everybody going crazy and everything going on. And one of them ended up here in Newberry this year, and he was amazing. One of the nicest kids you'd ever meet. And we really got to learn that he feels as badly about that situation as we do. So I think it's a really good way to improve our understanding of other countries and other cultures and the way the actual people there feel and live.
I've noticed that through Michigan Tech as well, with the large number of foreign students that they have there. Some of them come from countries that aren't necessarily real friendly with right now. They have students there from Iran, for example, and they're wonderful young people. They're great young people, and it helps to kind of melt a little bit of that ill feeling that we may have towards their nation if you see that they're kids are a lot like our kids.
Yeah, I mean, people aren't their countries. They're just people. So especially teenagers, we kind of have to take them as they are.
Yeah. So let's say I'm thinking about becoming a host for a foreign exchange student, Lauren. How do I initiate that process?
It's basically like an online job application. It's really simple. So I would get the email address that you use the most, send it through email, and you fill out a little information about your family. There's a background check. You add references. And then after that part clears, we meet in person and we kind of talk about the finer points and really get to go kind of down to the brass tacks, picking the student that's going to fit. And that's really the fun part.
Are you going to take a look, for example, at my house to make sure that my house is safe? Are you going to take a look at my income to see? I know you said that much of the funding for this is provided, but are you going to take a look at my income to say, hey, you know, you're financially stable, you're not going to become homeless in the middle of the year and our kid thrown out on the street?
Yes, that's part of the background check process. And basically, so long as people are above the poverty level and not on government assistance, which this is not anything negative about people who do. Sometimes we all need help. But the Department of State obviously wants to make sure that you are able to provide those meals when the student is in your home. And I do a walkthrough of the house, and as long as it is safe and comfortable and reasonably clean. So most normal American households are completely fine. I actually have my own student coming, and I know my house is not perfect.
And let's do the flip side now to that. Suppose there's a young student here in one of our school districts who is interested in studying abroad. How do they get started?
So we do also have an outbound program, and it's really similar. I would refer them to the person who's in charge of our outbound program, and she starts filling out the application. And it's not the cheapest thing to do, sending your kid to another country for a semester or a school year. But you make payments on it. And I think it's just something that you can't replace, having that experience.
And I suppose, you know, where they go somehow depends on the cost. If you're going to fly somebody to Toronto, as opposed to flying a kid halfway across the world to India or someplace like that, cost of living in various places, I suppose that can be a big factor.
Yeah, that's definitely a factor. And certain countries, the student from the U.S. should know the language for. If it's one of the main languages we teach, like French or German or Spanish, they would have you, you know, prove that you have some knowledge of that language. But there are other countries that our students can study abroad in where that's not a requirement, where they do like a language intensive camp when you get there. There's programs for going to Finland and Italy and, you know, places where we don't commonly offer those languages here at our schools.
So even if you have basically no background in that language, does it help to have a background in some foreign language? I have found that it's easier sometimes to learn a third language than it is to learn the second.
Not necessarily. It's not a requirement, but I don't think it would hurt for sure.
And I suspect that if you're a student who's thinking about studying abroad in a year or two, you'd sign up and start taking some foreign language classes now just to kind of get a feeling for the thing.
Oh, I think that would help quite a bit, yes.
So the students, while they are here, they're here for how long?
We have students who are either here for just the semester, so there's August to January students, or there's January to August students, and then a lot of students are here for the whole school year.
So what happens if the mix doesn't work, if the fit isn't right, the child is unhappy, the family's unhappy, what do you do?
Well, I always tell people it's a little bit like online dating, right? So you're looking through all these applications and their letters and their video and a whole profile, but it's still a 2D representation of a human being. And it's a teenager, a very human teenager.
Yeah.
So sometimes they get here and, you know, there's little things that might bother you. Just like if you found someone on Tinder and they look perfect, but real life, it doesn't quite fit. And that doesn't mean it's a bad student. It doesn't mean it's a bad family. If it's not quite right, it's not quite right. And we find another family where, you know, things are going to be more comfortable. And that does happen from time to time. And I don't think it's a failure on anybody's part.
Do you ever, for students who are going to be here for an extended period of time, do you ever tag team? One family takes them for the first semester, another takes them for the second.
Most families by the end of the first semester kind of fall in love with that student. So it doesn't happen too often, but once in a while.
Okay. All right. So the student comes over here. Schools, I know, make an effort to involve them in as many things as possible.
Yes. And I've kind of implemented up in this area as much as I can, where we can appoint an American student as a global ambassador in each school. They're actually able to use it on college transcripts and resumes, but that's like an official person who can show them around the school and tell them how to sign up for sports or how to pay for lunch, because that's something I don't know for every school. Sometimes they need help with that.
Yeah, I mean, I've covered sports here in the Copper Country for many years. I've seen foreign exchange students on football teams, basketball teams. Some of them basically just kind of sit there. It's kind of a token thing, I think, for them. Others have made some real contributions, and you're thinking, gee, yes, I wish they'd be back next year, but they're going back home.
I have a Danish student coming this fall who's a very active American football player. He actually goes to an athletic school in Denmark, so I'm excited to see him be part of our team here.
Wait a minute, a Danish student who plays American football?
Yes, American football is pretty big in Denmark, I learned.
Okay, I would not have expected that. I suppose there are these kinds of surprises in most of these relationships.
Yes.
What kind of things should I prepare for if I'm going to be a host family? Are there typical surprises that come up? Are there typical points of conflict that might arise?
One thing I have found that I think a lot of families don't think about, and when I started this job, I didn't think about it, is that in the U.S., we don't really have a big public transportation system. But most other countries, getting around town for an exchange student, they know how to hop on the bus or hop on the subway, or they can walk places. So a lot of the kids get here, and then they're either too embarrassed or too afraid to ask their host families for rides places because they feel like they're a burden asking someone to take time to drive them. We're here, we're used to driving our teenagers around if they don't have a license yet. It's normal for us. So being able to have that conversation as the adult and reassure them and make sure they know, yeah, you can come to me for that, that's been a big one.
Yeah, and I suppose that's a bigger problem in a rural area such as ours where public mm-hmm. transportation is certainly limited. I'm recording this from Kalamazoo where there's a Metro Transit bus system that runs all around town. And the other thing that I have, as I've talked with people from Europe over the years, when they get here, they are amazed at how big the United States is. Major cities in Europe are no more than 2 or 3 hours apart by train. Here, mm-hmm. we're spread out all over the place.
Oh, yeah. I've had some natural parents, what we call them, the parents from, you know, Europe or different countries, will come to pick up their kids sometimes at the end of the year and fly home with them. And we had one that decided she was going to come here, pick up her daughter, rent a car, and do a road trip from Sault Ste. Marie to California.
Oh, good luck with that, huh?
She had no comprehension. She thought this could be a 2 or 3 day trip. And we're trying to tell her, no, it's way bigger than you think. It's really hard to imagine if you haven't seen it.
Are there some really, really good stories about these relationships that develop that stand out for you that have kind of risen above the most over the years?
Oh, I mean, so I work with other coordinators too. So between me and the people that are on my team in Northern Michigan and Northern Wisconsin, we've had probably 400 students in the last 5 years. And it is hard to pick just one or two stories sometimes. I mean, there's funny ones. My mom hosted a student a couple of years ago who she was trying desperately to learn to cook for herself. And she did not realize that you have to take burner covers off of the stove before you turn the stove on.
Oh.
So, you know, she lit the burner covers on fire and we still laugh about it. And that was Greta. And that was 5 years ago. She's been back to visit 3 times already now.
I'll tell you a story that developed out of one of my relationships with an exchange student. Mm-hmm. And this was very unusual. When I was in high school in the early 70s, we had an exchange student from communist Yugoslavia. And she came and she spent a year with us. She was kind of quiet. I didn't know her real well. She mm-hmm. went back home and we never heard from her again until about 25 years later when we got a letter from her at the Rotary Club in town, which had sponsored her and which I was a member of at that point. And we got a letter, and first she apologized for not having corresponded with us after her time in the United States, but the communist government in Yugoslavia had frowned upon such things, and so she was not able to. By the time she was writing to us, that area was involved in that terrible war, Serbia, Croatia, in that area, and their hometown was right in the middle of it all. And she and her husband and her teenage daughter had emigrated out to South Africa for a while. That didn't work out. They came back home. They're in the middle of all the fighting. And would the Rotary Club please be able maybe to sponsor her daughter as an exchange student as she had been years earlier and get her a year out of the fighting so that she could experience a little bit of normalcy and safety? And we jumped at the opportunity. We arranged it immediately. Congressman Fred Upton from Southwest Michigan was a huge help in that. And then not only did we get her here, but he helped us get visas for her parents, and we reunited them here at the end of her stay.
Yeah, we were able to get some grants and bring a couple of Ukrainian students for this year, and I'm really excited about that, too. There's going to be one at Gwynn Schools.
Yeah, there is more to this sometimes than just somebody coming and taking American math classes.
Oh, absolutely. We have one that I just found out about last week, a Japanese man who had come to Northern Michigan maybe 20 years ago and had a great experience and loved it there and, you know, had maintained good relationship with family. And he reached out to us and asked, "Can you help? I would like my son to go to the same school that I attended and be in the same family that had hosted him 20 years ago. So we're trying to set that up right now, too.
Wow. Yeah, it's really fascinating how these things develop. And you think it would be ships passing in the night, but in many cases, this builds lifelong relationships and everybody benefits from them. Lauren Scher, if somebody is interested in either hosting or in becoming an exchange student, how do they reach out to your organization?
It's easiest to just get a hold of me directly, and I'm pretty easy to find on almost all of the internet and social media. But my cell phone, you can text or call. It's 906-231-4852. That's probably the quickest. Otherwise, I answer email really quickly, and I'm on Facebook. And so any way that works, I'm there.
All right. Lauren Scher is the Regional Director for International Cultural Exchange Services. Thank you for the update this morning. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you for having me.